Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Thursday, March 29th, 2018. I'm Senator Costello. Welcome, Senator Gardner.
Thank you.
And welcome, Senator Machicki.
Thank you.
We've got 7 board extensions on today's agenda, and but first, Senator Bills previously heard we're going to be moving Senate Bill 110. This is the tourism industry's response to the legislature's request that the industry come forward with a solution on how to extend tourism marketing. As you know, members, that the tourism industry has a phenomenal return on investment, and for every dollar that the state invests in marketing, we get the state as a whole gets about 35 back. So we're very interested in having that industry continue to thrive. There are some concerns with the version of the bill that we're moving, but we will move it on to Senate Finance, my hope is, and today, and then continue to work with the committee, that committee, on any information that they might need from this committee. So with that, Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the CS for Senate Bill 110, 30-LS0434/R from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection to moving the bill? Okay, seeing none, so moved. We'll take a brief at ease while we get ready for the next set of bills. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Next on our agenda is House Bill 273. This is the bill's first hearing, and the intent is to hold public testimony and move the bill out. With us today, we have staff to Representative Keto, so Crystal Koneman, welcome, and also Chris Curtis, welcome. So if the bill sponsor staff would like to introduce the bill, and then we'll have the auditor review the audit for this board, and then we'll move into public testimony and questions from members. So welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Crystal Keeneman, staff to Representative Keto. Before you today is House Bill 273. It's the Marijuana Control Board extension. Legislative audit recommended a 6-year extension to the year 2024. They are operating in the best public interest. A little background on the board. This is a new board. The legalization of marijuana was established by the voters in November of 2014. The board was created in 2015 and has met 24 times since July 2015. And Chris Curtis will go into more detail about the board. But this is a new board. They've been working through some growing pains, but they are a new industry and bringing in revenue to the state. Audit had 4 recommendations that they're currently working to address. Again, Chris Curtis will go into those details for you. And also available for testimony today is Erica McConnell from the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, as well as Brandon Emmett, the vice chair of the board. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm available for questions.
Thank you, and we'll go ahead and have Chris walk us through the audit, please.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor. You should all have a copy of the audit in your meeting packets. It's dated October 2006. And as Crystal mentioned, this is a new board, so this is its first sunset review. The purpose of a sunset audit is to determine whether a board or commission is serving the public's interest and whether it should be extended. Report conclusions begin on page 5. Overall, the audit found that this board is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing marijuana establishments and developing regulations that allow for the cultivation, the manufacture, and the sale of marijuana in Alaska. We are recommending a 6-year extension. We did conduct a survey of licensees and a survey of local governments to help evaluate the effectiveness of the board. We sent that survey out to 101 licensees. We had 70% response rate. We sent it to 16 local governments and had an 88% response rate. The questions and the responses are in your audit as attachment B and C. The responses to the survey were fairly positive overall. 100% of local government survey respondents and 75% of licensee survey respondents rated the board's overall effectiveness at serving the public's interest as excellent, or as effective, or very effective. 93% of local governments rated the board's effectiveness at enforcing marijuana laws in their area as good or excellent. Exhibit 2 on page 8 shows that the board issued 122 licenses from July of 2016 through April of 2017. 80% of the licensee survey respondents rated their overall license process as good or excellent. So fairly positive survey responses. On page 8, we explain that in the FY17 operating budget, they included intent language that states that the application and licensing fees should cover the cost of regulation and recover the unrestricted general fund appropriations made while the program was being established. So the audit team did look at the AMPCO, the Alcohol Marijuana Control Office, their process for tracking the revenue and expenditures. We did find there were processes in place, so they are tracking it. Management reported that it was too early to determine whether fees were set at levels sufficient to cover regulation, but they do expect to be fully funded by fees by FY20. Exhibit 3 on page 9 presents a schedule of fees established by the board. Four recommendations beginning on page 11. The first is a recommendation for the board, the director for the board, and the enforcement supervisor to formally establish an enforcement plan to direct their limited resources. The audit identified that the enforcement section was operating without a plan, and neither the board nor the AMPCO director had considered the need or importance of establishing goals or priorities for the enforcement division. By not formally establishing an enforcement plan, the enforcement section had no guidance for prioritizing their limited resources and does run the risk of not adequately protecting the public. Recommendation number 2 is for the board and the AMCO director to implement a process to monitor and track all complaints. They do have a process for receiving complaints. However, they are only tracked if the complaint results in an inspection or an investigation. Further, the basis for not investigating or not inspecting is not documented. Recommendation number 3 on page 12 is for the AMPCO director to develop written procedures for establishing expiration dates for marijuana handler permits. We tested 53 permits. We found 47 of them had incorrect expiration dates. The errors occurred due to a lack of written procedures and insufficient training. We believe this is an easy fix. And recommendation number 4 on page 13 is for the AMCO director to segregate the duties for calculating and remitting fees to local governments. Upon receipt of an application, the statutes require that the application be copied and immediately sent to the local government in which the licensee plans to operate, as well as half of the licensing fees get remitted to the local government. In FY17, the board remitted $113,000 of fees to local governments. So we looked at that process. We found only one employee responsible for calculating the amount and approving the payments out. Those duties should be segregated, an easy administrative fix. The department response is on page 33 to the audit. The board's response is on page 35. Both the board and the department concurred with all four recommendations.
Thank you very much, Chris. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Machicki?
Just have one brief one, and that is the six-year extension. Why did you go with a six-year extension?
Overall, the board is operating very well. Mm-hmm. It was really too early in the process to look at enforcement of marijuana laws and the renewal process. So it's really early in the infancy. We weren't comfortable going 8 years. However, we went as long as 6 years due to just how well they're operating right out of the gate.
Okay.
Senator Machicki?
No, I was just, I was wondering if that should be shorter. Just it might be nice to have a similar audit after just a couple of years. And the only reason I ask that question is I don't know that it's living in the right place. I don't know that mm-hmm. we have not overloaded the ABC board, now AMCO, with that responsibility. But I suppose if we determine over the next couple of years that we have been housing them both in the same place, it may be perhaps not the best fit, then we could introduce legislation to split them into two separate entities.
Senator Machicki, through the chair, the ABC board is a recommended extension of 4 years this year. You'll be seeing that in the future. we did consider there is efficiencies of auditing both at the same time because they share the same staff. We did consider that in our recommendation. However, it wasn't strong enough for us to consider a lower recommendation for the board that was operating very well. But there is efficiencies. If it was a shorter period, I would recommend 4 years. So they're done at the same time.
Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
I think they have done a very good job. That's not any, sometimes people have a tendency to get excited when you talk about a shorter extension, but it really is just about whether or not we're doing the industry, the providing the best service we can, but I'm fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Gardner.
No questions.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anyone here in Juneau who wishes to provide public testimony on House Bill 273? Is there anybody online who wishes to provide public testimony? Okay. Seeing none, Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 273/LS1183/D from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
So I have failed to close public testimony. So could you just rescind that motion and we'll just close public testimony?
Certainly. I rescind the past the motion I just made, Madam Chair.
Okay. Public testimony is now closed on House Bill 273. Senator Machicki.
I should be able to do this without looking at the paper, but I'm going to do it anyway. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 273/30-LS1183/D from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection to moving the bill? Okay, seeing none, House Bill 273 moves from committee, and we'll take a brief at ease while we sign the documents. Back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Next on our agenda is House Bill 274, which was introduced by Representative Quito and his staff. Caitlin Ellis is here to explain the bill, which is to extend the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Examiners. I may have that wrong, but you can correct me. Psychological Associate Examiners. And then following that, we will have Chris walk us through the audit. And then we'll open it up for questions and public testimony. So welcome, Caitlin.
Thank you. Through the chair, my name is Caitlin Ellis, staff to Representative Quito. As you said, the Board of Psychologists and Sociological Associate Examiners is what's before us in this bill. The bill extends it to the full 8-year extension. The board regulates 285 licensees, and it's set to sunset this year. The board meets quarterly, and the audit had two recommendations. The board should reduce fees, and the procedures should be implemented to ensure that courtesy licenses comply with monthly reporting requirements. The board and the department have letters which says they agree with both of those recommendations, and both recommendations have already, steps have been implemented to implement both of those. So a fairly clean audit, but Chris is here to go over the audit further, and the board chair, Alan Levy, is calling in now to testify as well.
Thank you. Chris?
For the record, I'm Chris Curtis, legislative auditor. So the audit report should be in your packets. It's dated October 2017. Overall, we conclude that the board is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing and regulating psychologists and psychological associate examiners. We did find the board monitored licensees and worked to ensure that only qualified individuals practiced, and we are recommending an 8-year extension, which is the maximum allowed for in statute. Information in the report that you may find useful when considering extension. On page 5, exhibit 2 is the schedule of licensing activity. As of March 2017, there were 285 active licensees. This represents a 174% increase when compared to our prior sunset audit in 2009. If you turn the page, the schedule of revenues and expenditures is on page 7. The board had a surplus of almost $400,000 at the end of FY17. The audit did note that the DCBPL management and the board did increase fees for FY17 despite the large surplus. This was just an oversight in that the surplus was not considered when they did the fee analysis. So we do have two recommendations, like has already been mentioned. The first is to reduce fees, taking into consideration that surplus. And the second is the courtesy licensees to enforce the reporting requirement. The responses to the audit are on page 21. Both the department and the board concurred with the recommendations.
Thank you very much, Chris. Are there questions from committee members? We do also have Linda Day and Christine Lumba, who also worked on the audit, online for questions for any of these boards. Senator Machicki.
Ms. Curtis, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Curtis, are your audit fees covered by the costs of the various boards and commissions that you provide an audit service over?
Through the chair, no. Sunset audits are, the costs for our office and our personnel are appropriated directly to legislative audit through the LB&A committee. We do have a interagency receipts for the single audit and the CAFR audit. That's the financial statement audit, which we are required to performed by statute. The single audit is a federal compliance audit. We are not required by statute to do that audit, so there is a memorandum of agreement between our agency and the Department of Administration to do that service, and we are reimbursed $750,000 for that service.
So, Madam Chair, just quick.
Senator Machicki.
You have some idea what an audit like this, and I've just been looking at this, if in fact we should, and we're not going to do it right now, it's just a consideration, but just wondering what an approximate cost to your department for this type of audit is, and if we should add that to future renewals on covering the cost of that service.
Our hourly rate we do calculate every year for the statewide cost allocation plan, and that is somewhere around the upper 70s, $78 an hour. An audit of this type of board, when it's clean, can run about 400 hours, 400 to 500 hours when you have no serious issues, and when it's a board we've continually audited. The massage therapists, it being a new board, will run higher, and the marijuana board would probably be more like 900 hours to conduct the surveys and do large-scale testing to gain assurance.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further questions? Okay. We'll go ahead and open it up for public testimony. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify on House Bill 274? Okay. Alan Levy, welcome. Thank you for calling in. And you're the chair of the board, and you've indicated you'd like to provide some public testimony.
Yes, my name is Alan Levy. I've been serving on the psychology board since March of 2012. I really don't have a lot to say. I just came prepared to answer questions if there were any. We have a very dedicated board, and we get good support from the department that oversees us, good working relationships. I was pleased with the outcome of the audit. That was an interesting and fair process. And as a board, we are looking forward to continue to serve Alaska in our capacity.
Thank you, Alan, and I appreciate your involvement, and I appreciate the times that you've come to Juneau to meet with legislators. Is there anyone else online who wishes to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, public testimony is now closed for House Bill 274. Senator Michiki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move HB 274-30-LS1184-D from Committee with Individual Recommendations and Attached Fiscal Notes.
Is there any objection to moving House Bill 274? Okay, so moved. We will go ahead and move directly into House Bill 275 and invite Crystal Kieneman forward from Representative Keto's staff. This is to extend the Board of Massage Therapists. Welcome, Crystal.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, again, my name is Crystal Kieneman, staff to Representative Keto. Before you is House Bill 275 that extends the Board of Massage Therapy. Ledge Audit recommends a four-year extension to 2022. They found that this board is operating in the best public interest. A little background on the board. It was created in 2015, so it is a new board. The original estimate was that there would be about 600 massage therapists that they would license. According to the audit from 2015 to 2017, the board issued 1,186 licenses, so much more than they had originally anticipated. As I mentioned, with a new board, there are always growing pains. One of the things that they found through this process was that the annual fingerprinting requirement that's in statute may be a little too burdensome to the licensees and the department in processing those. So included in House Bill 275 is not only the audit extension, but also an extension of the fingerprint requirement from a biannual fingerprinting to a once every three licensing cycles or every 6 years. So that would be less of a burden for the licensees. Audit had three recommendations, which Chris Curtis will go into in more detail. And additionally, Sarah Chambers from CBPL is here available for questions, as is Dave Edward Smith. The board chair should be online if there are any questions.
Thank you, Chris.
For the record, Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor. So your sunset audit is in your meeting packet dated October 2017. And as Crystal mentioned, this is a new board created in 2015. This is its first sunset review. We found that this board is serving the public's interest in all areas except licensing. In general, their meetings were conducted effectively, investigations were appropriately processed, and the board actively issued and changed regulations to improve the industry. In regards to licensing, the audit found that applicants were not consistently issued licenses in accordance with statutes, regulations, and/or procedures. Additionally, an FBI audit was conducted that found that the improvements are needed to comply with the federal standards over criminal history record information obtained as part of the licensing process. We recommend the legislature extend the board's termination date 4 years. Information that you may find useful as you're considering extension, page 11 is a schedule of licensing activity, and as Crystal already mentioned, 1,186 licenses were issued from FY16 through August of 2017, so just over one fiscal year, and that's almost double what they expected to receive. The schedule of revenues and expenditures is on page 14. The board had a surplus of $265,000 at the end of FY17. License fees were lowered for FY18 to address the surplus. Schedule of licensing fees is shown on page 15. Three recommendations. The first begin on page 17, and this is a recommendation for the DC BPL director in consultation with the board to improve procedures to ensure licensure requirements are met. We tested 31 license applications. We found three errors, and we go through those errors on page 17. In one case, a background check report that was required was not obtained. They had problems with the fingerprint card and went back to the licensee or the applicant, and DCBPL staff just didn't include that on their monitoring spreadsheet, and the ball was dropped, and the applicant was licensed, allowed to operate from September 2015 through July of 2017 without a background check. Secondly, we found one applicant had marked yes to a professional fitness question, but there was no evidence to show that they had provided an explanation for that yes answer or that the board had considered the explanation prior to licensing that applicant. And then thirdly, we found an applicant had marked yes to a professional fitness question, and they had provided an explanation and evidence that their national certification was revoked permanently for a violation of Code of Ethics and Standards of Practice. But that applicant was awarded a license on the requirement that they take 2-hour ethics course. But their standard procedures require that that type of information would have been forwarded to the division, to the division's investigative section for further review. So we found that the lack of thorough and timely evaluation of those type of that type of information does increase the risk to public safety, and that is why you see a recommendation. Recommendation number 2 on page 18 recommends that DCBPL director address the FBI audit findings and concerns. The FBI audit was conducted in April of 2017, and they found that DCBPL had used an unsecured website to route confidential criminal history record information. Additionally, applicants were not notified that their fingerprints would be used for a background check, and another federal requirement is they be informed on how to change, correct, or update FBI fingerprint information. Additionally, the audit found that an inadequate chain of custody over the fingerprint cards, and that is important because it ensures the integrity of the fingerprint process. As of October 2017, at the time we were doing field work, the division had addressed the application itself to inform the applicant that their fingerprints would be used for a background check, but the other findings were still outstanding at that point. Recommendation number 3 on page 19, we recommend the Office of the Governor, Boards and Commissions section, work to fill the public member position. The public member position became vacant in March of 2017, and in October when we were conducting field work, that position was still vacant. Now, per statute, the public member may not be a licensed health care provider, may not be an employee of the state, and may not be a member or former member of another occupational board. So according to the board, director of the boards and commissions, these stringent requirements make it difficult to find interested applicants. Response from the Office of the Governor to the audit is on page 29. The office does agree with the recommendation regarding the vacancy and believes a statutory fix is necessary to address the stringent requirements. The department response is on page 31. The department agrees that checks are needed to ensure the administrative record is complete, but they also state that they believe additional supervisory resources are needed to help meet that standard. In regards to the FBI audit finding, the department considered the April 2017 audit to be new information, and they believe they are responding quickly to address the recommendations. The board's response is on page 33. The board agrees with the audit's conclusions and recommendations.
Thank you. Senator Gardner?
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I'm not sure who's the best person to answer. It may be somebody from the board. But my question is, we were contacted by a constituent who's concerned about the background check process. And what I'd like to know is if a person discloses that they've had a problem, that there's something on their record, or if the fingerprint check and the FBI information comes back that they do have something on their record, what kinds of some things would disqualify somebody from getting a license? I mean, could you have, say, a criminal violation that's not related to sex trafficking or prostitution that's nonviolent that would disqualify you?
I'm Senator Gardner, through the chair. On page 6 of the audit, we go through professional fitness questions, provide some background information, and at the top of that is the actual statute that guides the fitness questions. it requires has that they have not been convicted of or pled guilty or no contest to a crime involving moral turpitude, so somewhat subjective, or who has been convicted of or pled guilty or no contest to a crime involving moral turpitude if the board finds that the conviction does not affect the person's ability to practice competently and safely. So it's really the board's evaluation of the support that they provide that would dictate their decision. The auditor just looks at whether they have had considered it and the adequacy of their consideration. So our findings in this case is no evidence to show that the applicant provided additional information or provided additional information that was pretty serious, but they didn't follow internal procedures to ensure that they gave that a thorough review.
Thank you.
Senator Machicki, any questions?
No, ma'am.
Okay. So we do have some individuals online for who are available to answer questions. We have Volker Ruby, who's with the American Massage Therapy Association of Alaska, and he's online for questions. Are there any questions for him? Okay. Welcome, Volker. Appreciate you listening in. Was there anything that you wanted to add to the bill?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. There's nothing else I'd like to add other than it makes sense to continue this board on, and we fully support it, and that's everything. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. The board chair, David Edward Smith, who did sign the letter in response to the audit, is online. And my only question, Mr. Smith, is do you see any challenges or problems with implementing the recommendations from the audit?
Thank you for the question, through the chair. I don't see any problems in implementing any of the recommendations. There is, of course, the issue regarding the chain of custody of the fingerprinting cards, which is an issue that is beyond the control of the board or division, and that's the requirement. That's in regards to the fingerprinting card itself being received by the division. And from what I understand, that this is a issue that is it's an issue that is a national issue with anyone that is dealing with your fingerprinting program that is not using a wrap-back program.
Thank you.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Is not using a what program?
So a wrap-back program is a program where this is a program where it allows a division to retain single fingerprints on file and update them. Actually, this is a problem that would require authorization by statute by a participating state, and Alaska doesn't currently have the ability to request FBI background checks without initiating a background check without a fingerprinting card.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. And is that program WRAP, W-R-A-P? Is that
It's R-A-P, B-A-C-K.
Thank you.
Thank you. Also online, we have Jill Motz, who's available for questions. She's also with the American Massage Therapy Association board member. Are there any questions for Jill? Okay, seeing none. I'll go ahead and open public testimony. Is there anyone here in Juneau that wishes to testify on the bill? Did want to notice we have board member Tracy Gilmore here. Thank you for being here. Okay, is there anyone else online who wishes to testify on the bill? Okay, seeing none, public testimony is now closed on House Bill 75. I'd like to thank the bill sponsor, Representative Keto. He's been here for a while watching the committee meeting. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the CS for House Bill 275, 30 LS1185-J from Committee with Individual Recommendations and Attached Fiscal Notes.
Is there any objection to moving the bill? Okay, seeing none, the bill does move. We'll take a brief at ease as we sign the documents and would like to invite Megan Holland forward for the next bill. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Next, we have the board extension for the real estate appraisers, House Bill 278, introduced by Representative Josephson. And Megan Holland is here from his staff to walk us through the bill, and then Chris Curtis will walk us through the audit. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Megan Holland, staff to Representative Andy Josephson. He apologizes that he can't be here right now. He's currently presenting a bill up in House Finance. You have before you right now House Bill 278, which extends the termination date of the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers. A little bit of background information on this board. The Board of Real Estate Appraisers came to be after the housing market crash in the early 2000s, which resulted in a new federal mandate that states control and regulate real estate appraisers. This board fulfills that requirement. The board is responsible for licensing, training, regulating, and license enforcement of real estate appraisers in the state of Alaska, and they currently manage 261 licensees. This board did receive a full recommended 8-year extension from legislative audit. I'd also like to note that this board also received good reviews from federal audits in both 2005 and 2007. We have yet to receive any opposition to the extension of this board. I would like members to know that the board chair, Mr. David Derry, is available online to answer questions, and also Mr. Bill Barnes, the president of the Alaska chapter for the Appraisal Institute, is also available online.
Thank you very much. Chris?
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, legislative auditor. A copy of the audits in your packets. It is dated June of 2017. The audit includes a background information section beginning on page 3 that explains the regulatory oversight structure for the appraisal industry, which has been established by the federal government. So it includes, the framework includes private entities that set the appraisal standards and the qualification criteria for licensing, state boards that license the appraisers, and federal entities that regulate the industry. So the Federal Appraisal Subcommittee is the entity that is responsible for monitoring state certifying boards or state licensing boards and enforcing the standards. We've included this information in the audit because it is important to understand that this board is subject to external oversight that's outside of the sunset process, and that oversight does factor into our term of extension. This federal subcommittee does provide on-site reviews that look at both the board and the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing Operations. So the conclusions on the audit start on page 7. We did find that this board is serving the public's interest by monitoring certificate holders and licensees and working to ensure only qualified individuals practiced in Alaska. We found that this board did develop and adopt regulations to comply with federal requirements to improve the real estate appraisal industry and to better protect the public. There are two recommendations which begin on page 16. First, we recommend that the DC BPL's director continue to improve administrative support to the board. We noted improvements since the last three audits, but on page 16, we go through additional areas that need to be addressed. First, we found that there were three certificate holders. They were entered incorrectly in the National Registry. Those were corrected when we made that made the division aware. Secondly, we reviewed five investigative cases, and we found three of the five had unjustified periods of inactivity, and the inactivity ranged from 130 days to 203 days, so some improvements needed in the timeliness of their investigations. And then thirdly, due to staff turnover, DCBPL management could not provide evidence that three of the 11 board meetings held during the audit period were public noticed. So individually, not significant, but when considered together, did indicate a need for improved administrative support to the board. The second recommendation is on page 18. We recommend DCBPL's director, in consultation with the board, decrease licensing fees to address the surplus. As of March 2017, there was a surplus of about $165,000, which we did expect to be much higher at the end of FY17, as the renewal period was June. So in March, the surplus was $165,000. Board members, we did see in the meeting minutes, had requested on multiple occasions that the division conduct a fee analysis so that they could look at reducing fees. But due to competing priorities, DCBPL management did not conduct a fee analysis, and as a consequence, licensees did end up paying a higher than justified fee. Other information in the report you may find useful, page 11 includes the schedule of licensing activity. There are 261 licensees as of March 2017. Then the schedule of revenues and expenses are on page 12, and then the summary of license fees is on page 13. We also note on page 14 that this board does plan to move forward with regulating appraisal management companies, and that this will significantly expand their duties in the coming years. However, we are still recommending the maximum 8-year extension, even though their duties are going to be expanded, in recognition of this federal oversight that is performed on the board. The responses to the audit begin on page 27. The department concurs with the findings and recommendations. The board's response is on page 29. The board also agrees. They also discuss an attorney general's opinion that they received that stated that they would need to get a statutory change in order to move ahead with regulating appraisal management companies. We do not agree with that conclusion. The additional auditor's comments are on page 33, which we explain the basis for our disagreement, that the current federal law and the state statutes, we believe, are sufficient enough to allow for that activity.
Chris, was there a response to that letter from the board? I see it in here, but what was their response to that?
There is no opportunity for the auditee to respond to our additional comments.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there questions from committee members? We do have David Derry, who's the chair of the board, online. And if there aren't any questions for him, he's indicated he'd like to testify under the public testimony portion of the hearing. No questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is David Derry. I'm serving as the chair of the Board of Real Estate Appraisers, and I just wanted to thank Representative Josephson for sponsoring the bill. I ask your support for extending the board as recommended in the legislative audit. And just a couple of points, recommendation regarding reducing fees. We did have a meeting and met with the division director, and we have subsequently agreed to a reduction of fees for our next recertification period, which will be in 2019. Unfortunately, we didn't have that to achieve a reduction in 2017, but I'm sure all my peers will be glad to have a reduction in 2019. The comment regarding the Attorney General's the opinion regarding the authority for the board to oversee appraisal management companies, we agreed with that. Unfortunately, the Attorney General did not. So, as you're well aware, the legislature and the Senate now has passed an AMC bill and moved it on to the House, which would allow us to do appraisal management company oversight, and we are anxious to take that on and willing to do that. So we ask your support for extension of our board. We worked hard to improve our board regarding, specifically regarding the federal audits that we're subject to. When I first came on the board, we were actually subject to annual audits because of some deficiencies that we had within our board. We've now moved to a good rating. We were disappointed we didn't make an excellent rating this last time by the appraisal subcommittee, but that's our goal, to have an excellent rating. So we're now on a 2-year audit schedule, which is typical for those boards in the state boards that are rated either good or excellent. And I certainly am available for any questions that anyone might have.
Thank you, David, for being available and for providing public testimony. Next, William Barnes, the president of Alaska Chapter of Appraisal Institute, calling in from Palmer.
Hello, this is William Barnes. I'm president of the Alaska Chapter of the Appraisal Institute based in Chicago. We have 111 members of the 261 Alaska Certified Appraisers, or 43%. And two of our members, I'm proud to state, are actually on the Arizona Board of Appraisal, the Alaska Board of Appraisal. And our organization is in support of reauthorizing the Alaska Board of Appraisal for another 8 years, House Bill 278. It's part of a federal mandate established in 1989. We believe the Alaska Board of Appraisal is performing its mission of protecting the public and the banking system. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for William Barnes? I just had one quick question about the public notice for the meetings. Is that something you think that you'd be able to easily rectify moving forward?
You asking me that?
Okay. Okay. Is there anyone here in Juneau who wishes to testify on House Bill 278? Okay, seeing none. Public testimony is now closed. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 278-30-LS1160-D from Committee with Individual Recommendations and Attached Fiscal Notes.
Is there any objection to moving the bill? Okay, seeing none, the bill is moved. Thank you. We'll continue on then with House Bill 279, also introduced by Representative Josephson. And Megan, if you would walk us through that bill, and Chris can review the audit with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You have before you House Bill 278, which extends the termination date of the Real Estate Commission for 8 years. The Alaska Real Estate Commission oversees brokers, associate brokers, and sales licensees. They are responsible for regulating supervisors of licensees and enforce their requirements through their investigations unit. They currently oversee 567 licensees across the state. They received a full 8-year recommendation from legislative audit. We did receive one letter of opposition to this board extension, which I would like to briefly address. I brought that letter of opposition to the attention of the Real Estate Commission, and it was determined in previous committees that the complaint was not within the purview of the Real Estate Commission. And they did process her complaint accordingly and let her know about the functions of the commission and the fact that her expectations of what she wanted the commission to do and the actual functions that it served are a little different. Also, Ms. Tracy Berrickman, the chair of the Real Estate Commission, is available online if you would like to ask her any questions about the commission itself or that letter of opposition. In addition to that, Sharon Walsh, the executive administrator of the Real Estate Commission, should also be available online for any questions you may have.
Thank you, Megan. Chris?
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, legislative auditor. Okay, so a copy of the audit in your meeting packet is dated June of 2015. Report conclusions begin on page 7. The audit concluded that this commission is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing and regulating real estate licensees and offices. The commission monitored licensees and worked to ensure that only qualified individuals practiced. Furthermore, we found that the commission adopted and developed regulations to improve the real estate industry and better protect the public. We are recommending the maximum 8-year extension. You may notice that this audit covers a relatively short time period, less than 2 years. And that is because the prior sunset was dated July of 2015. The prior sunset audit identified that the commission had failed to obtain a master errors and omissions insurance policy. The commission was required by 2008 law to obtain a master policy and make it available to licensees. Licensees were required to obtain the insurance either through an independent policy or through the master policy made available. However, statutes stated that if there was no master policy, then none of the licensees were required to obtain the insurance. The prior audit found that the Commission and DCBPL had no good explanation for the delay and the inability to obtain the insurance policy. Subsequently, the legislature gave the board only a two-year extension, and they also changed the statute to require all licensees to obtain the insurance, irregardless of whether a master policy was available. So this time around, we found that the commission worked with the DCBPL to change regulations that facilitated a successful procurement, and a contract for the insurance policy was signed in June of 2017. Consequently, we are recommending a maximum eight-year extension. There is one recommendation. It's on page 17. It is a repeat recommendation from the prior sunset audit. The prior recommendation was for the DCBPL chief investigator to take action to ensure cases are actively investigated, and we found that there was improvements, that the management had instituted a dashboard to monitor case resolution. They had created internal benchmarks to establish timeliness goals for their investigators. However, we did test seven cases and did find three with periods of inactivity. The periods were shorter, the percentage of errors was smaller, but still improvements need to be made. So we again reiterate the recommendation. Page 29 is the department's response to the audit. Page 31 is the board's response. The governor's comments are on page 27. All entities concurred with the recommendations.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I remember several years ago when there were a lot of contacts from people who were found that the required E&O insurance was onerously expensive, and they were very, very unhappy about it. And I haven't heard about that for a long time, so I'm assuming that having the master policy being something they could use has solved that problem. Would you agree with that assessment?
Through the chair, we found no complaints about the cost of the insurance, and it's fairly new, June of 2017.
Uh-huh.
I know it was the intent that this would provide a cost-effective way for all licensees to obtain the insurance.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions of committee members?
I have a question.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So on that letter, I won't mention the name, the letter to Representative Birch, I'm aware of the struggles that that property owner went through on that property. Could you explain why it was not a response, that none of it is related to a responsibility of the Real Estate Commission?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I think I'd rather let the chair of the Real Estate Commission handle that question, as she is well-hearsed in the functions of that commission. Okay. Far beyond what I am.
And that would be Tracy Barrickman.
I'm here. This is Tracy.
Tracy, did you hear the question from Senator Machicki?
Yes, ma'am. I believe he said he would like an explanation why it was not jurisdictional to the Real Estate Commission. Is that correct?
Yes.
Do I understand the question? So complaints go through the division's investigative process where jurisdiction is first determined. If it is, then the complainant and the respondent are both notified, and then the investigation proceeds and is concluded. If it's not jurisdictional to the Real Estate Commission, in which case this one was not, then the complainant is notified, and that individual, I do have it on good authority that I confirm that she was notified by the division. Public commission meetings are not the appropriate forum for hearing complaints.
Senator Machicki?
Thank you. So is there a clear path to jurisdiction for this particular case if it was not the Real Estate Commission?
Yes, sir, there is. It is clear, and it's in the statute. We're governed by the statutes and regulations.
Tracy, I think Senator Machicki might be going to, and it's my question too, which is, was the individual pointed in a direction where she could launch a complaint?
I apologize. I don't have the answer to that. That we don't know. That would be fall under the division, okay. under the investigation division.
I think we can take that offline, perhaps. I was just, you know, what comes to mind is a Better Business Bureau or something, but we can certainly take that offline and appreciate you bringing that up, Megan.
Thank you.
Is there anyone online who wishes to provide public testimony? Tracy, I see that you are interested in testifying.
I'm sorry. Are you ready for my testimony?
Yes.
Thank you. So, again, my name, thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Tracy Berrickman. I am the chair for the Real Estate Commission. I am speaking on behalf of the commission. And for clarification, what I heard, they read this bill as HB 278, and it's actually 279. Also, and this came up before, there's, I believe they read that there's 576 licensees that this commission serves. And it's actually, we actually have 2,510 licensees in the state of Alaska. I am in support of extending the term of the Real Estate Commission until June 30th of 2026. The Real Estate Commission operates well within its budget and maintains a cumulative surplus. Licensing fees adequately cover the operating costs of the commission and therefore place no burden on the state's budget. As a commissioner, I work with the state's investigator to review complaints that come into the commission as a result of a real estate transaction or a licensee's interaction with a member of the public. Most complaints that are filed have a legitimate foundation, and in many cases, licensees are disciplined through education, fines, and sometimes suspension or revocation of their license. Without this process, the only recourse for the public would be litigation. In some cases where a licensee has violated a law, the consumer may not have the resources or desire to take their complaint to court and therefore would allow improper or illegal actions of a licensee to continue. This would not be in the public's best interest. Additionally, by modifying and adopting regulations, the commission constantly improves industry practices. It takes consistent work by the Real Estate Commission to keep regulations on track with the constantly changing real estate industry. This is necessary to keep Alaskans safe from financial losses associated with their real estate transactions. Our last sunset review concluded the commission is serving the public's best interest. The review unconditionally recommends extending the termination date to June 30th, 2026 with the recommendation that the division's chief investigator continue to improve oversight to ensure investigations are completed timely. Please keep in mind that the real estate professionals have access to our consumers' homes. To terminate the commission would be taking away an important guardian for consumer protection, and that is Alaska's consumer protection. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you very much, Tracy. Next, Sharon Walsh, are you interested in providing public testimony or just being available for questions?
I'm just available for questions. Thank you.
Okay. There are no questions. Thank you for listening in. Next, Joanne Blackburn calling in from Anchorage.
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, Joanne.
Hi. I'm calling because I would be supportive of extended abilities for these commissions to continue as we move forward with large capital items of interest and impact, not only to the state's budget, but to private people's possible nexus with property. It's important that we have a strong appraisal industry. And I have taken appraisal classes and got an A at the University of Alaska. I have worked for the state of Alaska for the Department of Transportation and the right-of-way section, and I have seen varying approaches and varying qualities, comparatively speaking, of acceptable appraisals in support of federally funded projects. As we hope to have more federally funded projects, it's important that the appraisal industry both in support of state activity and private interests, like, for instance, perhaps corporate native interests, as well as just regular Alaskans, we need to have excellent appraisal abilities. For instance, there may be a bias in support of only valuing properties at a residential value, when in fact there may very well be a more commercial valuation. And federal regulations don't really support allowing development for these projects, and results in a loss to the public, to their valuations. Also, I'd like to caution legislators from taking a personal interest or even giving the appearance of inquiring in regards to complaints regarding hearsay information, cottage industries, et cetera, about private families' property interests. I see a lot of that, and I think that people know what I'm talking about, and I think it's inappropriate, and it's beneath standards. So I'm asking that we let these boards be strong, and we would need to keep them developed, and we need to not have an adjunct conduit based upon hearsay through the legislative process. That's all I have to say.
Joanne, thank you very much for calling in, and I'll ask the recording secretary to place your comments with House Bill 278, which is the Real Estate Appraisers Board. So I appreciate your patience. And
thank you.
Is there anyone else here in Juneau who wishes to testify on House Bill 279, the extension of the Real Estate Commission? Okay, seeing none, public testimony on the extension of the Real Estate Commission, House Bill 279, is now closed. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 279-30-LS1161-D from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection to moving the bill? Okay, seeing none, House Bill 279 moves from committee. Next, we will hear House Bill 280, introduced by Representative Josephson, to extend the Board of Marital and Family Therapy. Megan, if you could walk us through the bill, and then Chris the audit, and then we'll open it up for public testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll get the number right this time. You have before you House Bill 280, which extends the termination date of the Board of Marital and Family Therapy. The Board of Marital and Family Therapy regulates and licenses therapists and approves supervisors. They establish and enforce training, education, and continuing education requirements of their licensees. They currently oversee 85 licensees across the state and received a full 8-year recommendation by legislative audit. I would like members to know that Ms. Karen Cunningham, a member of the Board of Marital and Family Therapy, is available online to answer any questions you may have.
Great. Thank you very much. Next, Chris, if you could walk us through the audit.
For the record, Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor. The Sunset Audit is dated May of 2017. Report conclusions begin on page 3. The audit concluded that this board is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing and regulating marital and family therapists and marital and family therapist supervisors. The board did monitor licensees and work to ensure that only qualified individuals practiced in Alaska. Furthermore, we found the board actively developed and adopted regulations to improve the profession. We are recommending an 8-year extension. There were no recommendations made as part of the audit. Information in the report that's helpful in your consideration of extension, page 6, is the schedule of licensing activities. There are 85 active licensees as of January 31st, so this board is one of those boards that has very few licensees. This is a 7% decrease from the 2013 Sunset Audit. Page 8 is the schedule of revenues and expenditures for the board. The board had a surplus of just over $68,000 as of March 31st. The board has operated with a surplus over the past several years despite the low number of licensees. And you can see on page 7 is the schedule of license fees. So page 19 is the response from Office of the Governor. Page 21 is the department's response, and page 23 is the board's response. The department and the Office of the Governor agree the board is serving the public's interest and should be extended. The board also agrees with the extension of 8 years.
Thank you, Chris. My only question, and it's, I think it's for Karen, has to do with the moving forward with regulations. It sounds like there's additional regulations needed in order to prop up telemedicine or distance delivery of marital and family therapy. Is that something, Karen, that you could comment on?
I'm just looking something up. there is a recognition that there's still a need for additional regulations for telehealth and telesupervision. For now, what we are doing is waiting for language and approval from the nationally approved telehealth guidelines from the American Association of Family Therapy Regulatory Board. So the information is out there, and it's just filtering down to us.
Okay, thank you. Are there any further questions of committee members? Okay, would anyone here in Juneau like to testify on House Bill 280? Is there anyone online who wishes to testify? Karen, are you interested in providing a testimony on the overall bill?
I did. Yes, I've prepared something. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Are you ready?
Yes. Go ahead and provide your testimony.
Thank you. Okay. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Karen Cunningham. I sit in the vice chair position on the Alaska Board of Marital and Family Therapy. Our regulatory board consists of 5 members appointed by the governor. There's 2 public members and 3 Alaska licensed marital and family therapists. I am testifying on behalf of the board, and the board does support the extension of the board's termination date. The practice of marital and family therapy includes the diagnosis and treatment of mental and emotional disorders referenced in standard diagnostic nomenclature. This covers all disorders, whether cognitive, which is how you think, affective, which is how you feel, or behavioral, which is what you do, within the context of human relationships. Marital and family therapy is one of the core mental health disciplines, is based on research and theory that mental illness and family problems are best treated in a family or systems context. Research on the systems-based therapy shows that marital and family interventions are as effective as and often more effective than individual therapy in treating anxiety, depression, other mood disorders, substance use and abuse, domestic violence, marital problems, child problems, schizophrenia, and more. When faced with severe mental illness, families who work with marriage and family therapists can expect improvements in well-being, less medical illness, decreased medical care utilization, and increased self-efficacy, often at a lower cost than treatment for the individual. A lot of this care can also be seen as preventative care for future mental illness. You also don't have to look very far to find research coming out day after day showing that human connection is linked to healthier hearts, lower risk of heart attack, improved immune system functioning, increased disease prevention, and quicker recovery when ailments do strike. It's for these reasons and many more that the field of marital and family therapy should continue to be regulated. This board issues licenses to marital and family therapists, associate marital and family therapists, and marital and family therapists credentialed in other jurisdictions. The powers of the board include adopting regulations for quality control of applicants seeking licensure, establishing continuing education requirements for license renewal, adopting a code of ethical practice, establishing minimal standards for supervisor of associates, ensuring all licensees are up to date in child protection statutory requirements, and lastly, adopting and enforcing regulations necessary to carry out its own duties. The board serves the public's interest by effectively licensing and regulating marital and family therapists and approving marital and family therapy supervisors. the board monitors licensees and works to ensure that only the most qualified individuals practice in Alaska. Furthermore, the board develops and adopts regulations to improve marital and family therapy occupation. From July 2014 through January 2017, the board held 5 meetings a year, which exceeded the minimum of 1 required by statute. A review of 13 board meetings held during the audit period found that all but 1 was public notice timely. Each meeting allowed time for public comment, and a quorum was consistently met. The audit determined that the board does not duplicate the efforts of another government or private sector agency. A review of board complaint and investigative data found cases were addressed timely. There were 7 complaints open during the time period. During this time period, the board added 2 regulations to improve continuing education requirements. These changes added specific education requirements to include professional ethics, cross-cultural issues, addiction, and domestic violence. These changes help ensure required continuing education serves the unique need of Alaskans. The conclusion is to conclude the Alaska Board of Marital and Family Therapy continues to operate in the public interest. The board is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing and regulating marital and family therapists and approving marital and family therapists, supervisors, and associates. The board monitors licensees and works to ensure only qualified individuals practice in Alaska. Furthermore, the board develops and adopts regulations to improve the marital and family therapist occupation. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Karen. I appreciate you providing prepared comments, and feel free to provide those to the committee. We could then forward along with the bill. And I appreciate the time
the time
that you took in preparing that. I found it very interesting. Is there anyone else online who wishes to testify on House Bill 280? Okay, seeing none, public testimony is now closed. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 280, 30-LS1162/D from Committee with Individual Recommendations and Attached Fiscal Notes.
Is there any objection to moving House Bill 80 from Committee? Okay, seeing none, so moved, and thank you, Megan. We'll go ahead and take a brief at ease while we get ready for the next bill. Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Next, we have House Bill 302 to extend the Board of Professional Counselors, introduced by Representative Wohl, and his aide Ashley Strauch is here to present the bill, and then Chris Curtis will walk the committee through the audit. Then we'll open it up for public testimony and questions from committee members. So welcome, Ashley. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ashley Strauch, and I work for Representative Wohl, who sends his apologies for not being here. He's currently chairing House Energy. HB 302 is an extension to the Board of Professional Counselors. The bill extends the board for 8 years to 2026, and the board's primary function is to license professional counselors and issue supervisor certificates. The board is composed of 5 members, all of which are appointed by the governor. There are 4 licensed professional counselors and 1 public member as a part of the board. And the board currently oversees 657 professional counselors and 73 supervisor certificates. And between FY14 and FY16, they issued 190 new licenses, which represents a 46% increase in their licensure. As they were determined to be operating in the public's best interest, they've been recommended for a full 8-year extension.
Thank you. Chris?
My name is Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor. You have a copy of the audit in your packets. It's dated April of 2017. Report conclusions begin on page 3. We did find that this board is serving the public's interest by effectively licensing and regulating professional counselors and certified counselor supervisors. The board monitored licensees, worked to ensure that only qualified individuals practiced. Furthermore, we found the board actively developed and adopted regulations to improve the profession. We are recommending an 8-year extension. We had no recommendations as part of the audit. Information in the audit is the standard schedule of licensees. Licensing activity is on page 5. Again, there were 657 active licenses as of January 2017, and when we compare this to the prior 2009 sunset audit, represents a 46% increase, so a growing profession. Page 6 includes the schedule of revenues and expenditures. The board had a surplus of just over $70,000 as of March 31st, and the board and management expect to decrease fees in fiscal year 18. The license fees are listed on page 7. The response to the audit begin on page 19. Office of the Governor, the Department, and the Board Chair all agree the board should be extended 8 years.
Thank you very much. Let's see, before we get into public testimony, do members have any questions for the sponsor or Chris or Deborah Hamilton, who's the chair, who is online? Okay, seeing no questions. Is there anyone here in the room who would like to provide public testimony on the extension of the Board of Professional Counselors? Is there anyone online? Okay, seeing none, public testimony is now closed for House Bill 302. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 302, 30-1302/A from committee with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection to moving the bill? Okay, seeing none, thank you. House Bill 302 does move from committee. Thank you for being here, Chris. I appreciate you meeting with me earlier and for your attention to detail on all of the work related to the audits. The next meeting for the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will be 9 a.m. here in this room on Monday. And with that, we are adjourned.